when a 22-year-old teacher and a 14-year-old boy,
they had been in a somewhat friendly relationship,
disappear after hours into an empty classroom
with the lights turned low and the door was closed.
Rumors inevitably fly.
The administration believes Goodall's reputation is forever tarnished.
This week on Open Record,
they're in the classroom for 53 minutes.
Public records.
The public gets to find out what this person did.
Of a private lesson. From the Fox 6 studios, this is Open Record. I'm your host, Brian Polson, and I am joined by Open Record's executive producer, Sarah Smith. Hey, Sarah.
Hi.
And we are joined by Fox 6's Sam Kramer. Welcome back to the podcast, Sam.
Thanks for having me back, guys.
We are recording this episode on Wednesday, February 21st, for release on Thursday, February 22nd. And this week's topic, sexual assault in the classroom. How a high school teacher's close relationship with a student may have crossed the line. The lies she allegedly told investigators, and her efforts to block you from seeing what she's accused of doing. And we'll get to all of that when we come right back. So this case happens in Oak Creek, Wisconsin, Oak Creek High School. A 22-year-old teacher and a 14-year-old student. Sam, you've been following this, I know, for a number of months. Give us kind of the background here. What happened?
Yeah, so we received a couple of tips. One from people that are around the district and also from parents that said, hey, we believe something is going on here. I'm not exactly sure. We're not really getting communication from the district. So could you please look into this? So we said, okay. And that was actually before criminal charges were even introduced into the picture here. So the first thing we did was we figured out who the teacher was, and then we filed the open records request for her personnel file. And there's a couple of reasons for doing that. One, she's a public school teacher. It's open records. And if there had been any sort of investigation into this alleged improper relationship, it's going to likely be within that personnel file. And so we actually filed that in June. Criminal charges came the next month in July. And it's really been a process that has played out in court since then.
When you were hearing this as a tip, so there's no criminal charges, there's nothing really out in public yet about this. This is a rumor going around the school and the community. People are hearing something's happening, right?
Exactly. It's, you know, nobody has any, verifiable information on hand, and it's a high school. So rumors are going to fly. We know that. All of us have been to high school. But when you hear it from different people from different circles, it makes you want to push it and maybe pursue it. So that's what we decided to do.
She's a young teacher, obviously, so 22, pretty fresh out of school and being, you know, student teacher and stuff like that. So obviously there's a difference when someone who's maybe a more veteran teacher, like 40, is in a classroom versus maybe a 22-year-old, especially with high schoolers. Again, it's one thing to be in a 5K classroom, but it's a different thing to be in a high school classroom.
Totally. And she graduated from there not that long ago. This happened in 2022. I believe she graduated in 2019. So someone that is not just familiar with that, but not that long ago was on the other side of that teacher-student relationship. So it is different, certainly, when you're looking at it from a reporter's perspective, but also even just a parent's perspective.
It's obviously closer in age than maybe some other cases we've heard of, but I also think she went to Alverno College. She got a degree in education. I'm sure there were classes. I'm sure there were lessons where they talk about professional boundaries. Mm-hmm. Clearly, it's inappropriate to have any kind of a romantic relationship or sexual relationship with a student.
Definitely. And even just looking through the records that we've seen, it's in the employee handbook. And frankly, that's why it's in the employee handbook of there is a line. There are rules in place to avoid even the appearance that something had gone wrong, not let alone the fact that something may have gone wrong.
So it's December of 22, and the rumors are kind of flying. There's some tips kind of coming in and stuff like that. But then some students come forward, they go to administration with pictures, some, what do you call it, evidence, or just like some information that could be a problem.
Yeah, so there's been posts on social media, whether it's TikTok or Instagram, what have you, from students that are just point blank asking her these kind of off-base questions and asking her if she has a favorite student and this or that. And she answers and, you know, she kind of seems maybe thrown off by those questions. So you pair that with the fact that on December 22nd of 2022, it's the Friday, it's just doing the quick math in my head, it's probably the last day of school before the Christmas break. Mm-hmm. And you know, they go back and that's when they believe that the incident happened. And so they eventually review all this surveillance video. But really it is the students and kind of some teachers as well saying, hey, something doesn't seem right here. And so they go back and review that video and you can see where they were coming from. And we received that in our open records request as far as it does seem like they are way closer, her being Rachel Goodall, this teacher, and this student, than any other teacher-student relationship you would normally see.
So we're in February of 2024 now, and we now sort of, I mean, you went through this whole process of hearing these rumors, filing the open records requests. She tries to block the open records request, tries to keep those from being released publicly, and then criminal charges are filed where you get some information about what may have happened here, but she continues to fight the open records release. Now she's saying, I can't get a fair trial if these records are publicly released, my disciplinary file. So in all of that time, there's a lot of sort of us being in the dark about what really happened here, what are the allegations, and then finally, just this month, you get all of these records, the disciplinary file, some of the internal communications, the suspension notices, the police report and their investigation. So now that all of that is there, give me some idea of the picture we have of what happened here.
Yeah, it's about as clear as it can be within a school district. They don't have actually any cameras in the classroom, but we see in the video that they sent us, she leaves the school after the school day is done. She's wearing a sweatshirt and pants.
This is December of 2022, right?
2022, yeah, okay. On the 22nd. She comes back within right around an hour later, and she's wearing a dress and heels. It's like she's dressed for a date. And the student is actually waiting for her around and in her classroom. They go in, they close the door. And you actually can't tell at the time, but about 20 minutes later, there's an indicator that the door was locked. It's a member of the cleaning crew that is coming by to, you know, presumably do their daily duties and has to unlock the door. This woman walks in and I wouldn't say she's startled, but she feels like she's maybe interrupting just based upon her body language.
You see that she unlocks the door, and as she's starting to open the door, she pauses.
Yes.
And then kind of almost closes
almost
the
like
door
startled,
again.
Startled, yeah.
Yeah. Almost like, I wasn't expecting to see someone in here. But then whoever's in must say something to her because then she cracks it back open and seems to communicate with them.
And leaves it open. Mm-hmm. And you know, the investigators within the district actually did talk to her, and she said that she did see two people in there, but she believed that this was just a mother-son type of relationship, which is interesting. So they are in there for almost an hour, only interrupted that one time by the cleaning crew, and then they walk out. We see the cameras basically follow them the entire way from her classroom in the ninth grade center all the way over to the gym. And if you've ever been to Oak Creek High School, it's a pretty big campus, so that's a long walk. They do it together. They walk into this JV girls basketball game together. And I think that piece of video was what was most interesting
to
me.
That was so, the body language of the other kids already in the stands when those two came in was so, like, I mean, it was right there.
It's a group of students that are sitting together. Yep. The teacher and the student walk past to go to a different section.
Yeah.
All the heads turn.
Yes.
And then they turn and talk to each other.
Right. Yeah. And you clearly tell that they think something nefarious is up. And frankly, just take a step back. Why would a teacher and a student sit together right next to each other outside of the student section at a JV girls basketball game? It just doesn't seem right. Mm-hmm. So they're there for really the extent of the game. And then they both leave together. And then they head their separate ways. And so you can see, again, there is a proximity here that you don't normally see within that type of relationship. And that's just the video evidence. The investigation revealed a lot more in terms of what they found out, what they tried to find out, and what they did and didn't do.
I want to go back to the day because this JV basketball game, this is after school hours. You mentioned that the teacher, the video shows that she leaves in sort of like workout gear, and then goes home. She returns later in a dress, that sort of looks like she's meeting someone. She ends up telling investigators that she was going to be meeting her sister out later that night to go to a musical, I think it was. That was the explanation for getting dressed up. But what strikes me here is if, in fact, as she is charged, there was, in fact, some sort of inappropriate relationship and a sexual relationship, it seems awfully blatant and bold to just parade right out in front of the other students and sit together in the stands. I almost wonder if I were her attorney and for her defense, is that one of the arguments is if we were doing it, would we be that blatant? But certainly the students looked at that and they were all thinking, you know, this matches the rumors, right?
Well, certainly. And, you know, it's always the burden of proof. Well, if you weren't actually there, what do you actually know? It may look as one thing. Mm-hmm. But is it actually what it appears to be? Certainly, I think the defense attorney would be wise to attack that in court because really the main reason that this is in criminal court is because of something the student said months later.
So, okay. So you get the open records request fulfilled and this is the video that we see. Did the school see that and did they know that? Like, what was the school's response? Like, had they already been looking into it? And what happened?
Well, they had looked into it between December of 22 and January of 23 and reviewed all of that video. We received it in February of 2024. So it's easy for us to look at it with hindsight. Mm-hmm. But the investigation, it's a 19-page report, and it's really interesting because they talked to her several times. First, kind of allowing her to come clean with any information she wants without presenting any sort of evidence that they already have. And she says that, you know, she only talks to this, certain student in passing, that there is no, sort of relationship, but then the district and it's the HR director, it's the, principal of Oak Creek High School and also principal of their ninth grade center that are leading this investigation. They look at this video and say, what do you mean you only talk to the student in passing? And like you mentioned, when she says that she's going home, to change and then go to a musical with her sister, well, she went home after school. When she was done with the JV basketball game, you could have changed then, as they point out in their report. So there are almost a dozen lies that they say she provided that they can contradict based on video evidence, based on interviews of other teachers and students. And so there's just all these questions that continue to mount.
You guys know that I do this whenever we're going to have a topic on open record. I start to research, I start to dig. And one of the things I love to do is build timelines because it really helps you understand an association of things. So I went through all of the records that you have obtained and through all of your hard work have stored. And it's not just the criminal complaint and the police report, but it's all of those other records, the communications between Rachel Goodall, the teacher, and the school district, the suspension letter, things like that, where you really get an idea of how this all played out. And you go back to December. It was December shortly after this basketball game that the district starts looking into this. But when they interviewed Rachel Goodall the first time, they hadn't seen the video. They hadn't started looking at the video of the game yet. She tells them, I just know this student in passing. We don't have any kind of a close relationship. And then they go back and review the video and they say, well, this looks awfully close to us. Mm-hmm. So they think now, okay, she certainly omitted some important information. She said nothing about this basketball game to them. So they go back and they interview her again and they say, anything you want to tell us?
Yep.
And that's kind of where this goes further. That's where you said they started to build this idea that whether or not there was evidence of a sexual relationship at that point, they felt she was not being honest.
Exactly. And that's really all that they were after in looking in how many times that they talked to her, which was two. And again, they just built this list saying, hey, this doesn't check out. This doesn't check out. This doesn't check out based upon what you've told us. And then based upon the video that we've gone and seen, and they ultimately decide on a 10-day suspension is what the kind of the end of the report is. But they put some interesting caveats in there. They allow her to reduce it to 5 days if she comes forward and talks with the superintendent without HR present to kind of really provide the true story that they felt that they were not getting. And it appears that she does that based upon a different record that we get. So when she's initially served with a 10-day suspension, she appeals and it actually makes its way all the way down to 4 days.
Looking at the timeline, most of the activity here seems to happen right after the Christmas break. They get back to school after the Christmas break, and there's the second interview with Rachel Goodall that they do, and the notice of suspension that you're talking about. The student's mother then requests, she starts to hear, because he's hearing from the teacher that, hey, I'm getting in trouble here. The student's mother says, I want to talk to the district. And she says, I don't believe there's anything inappropriate going on. So we don't want to see this teacher fired. And finally, after all of that, the school resource officer hears that this is going on and gets involved. He actually talks to the mother. Is that right?
That's correct. He, I believe his case report starts on January 6th of 2023 saying, hey, I am hearing rumors as the school resource officer at Oak Creek High School. I'm, you know, he talks to the student's mom. He didn't talk directly to the student, but he also did connect with the district investigators to say, hey, is this happening? What's going on? Do you need my involvement? And they kept him away, which I thought is really interesting. That's the perhaps the biggest question remaining to me is why, if you are investigating something that, if it's true, rises to the level of criminal conduct, why are you keeping the police out of that investigation? I just haven't gotten an explanation on that.
And I will tell you, we did the story in East Troy with the East Troy Middle School band teacher who, for a long time, there were internal investigations done by the school district, the principal, they're involved, but they didn't involve police. And in that case, it was years before police were notified. And it is something that I know has been raised that are we seeing this as a pattern in some school districts where the default is let's keep this in house, let's deal with it here. This is going to be a mess if it gets out. And they have, it's similar to East Troy. They had a school resource officer who was never told that any of this was going on. Now here it happens within a matter of days, but still there is a period of time where the district is looking at this and they don't even tell their own school resource officer. He hears about it and finally gets involved, but he ultimately concludes, I can't prove there's an illegal sexual relationship here, and he leaves it at that. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the school district's report in January, what they said at that time, and how this went from an internal, maybe you lied to us investigation to sexual contact and criminal charges. And we'll talk about that when we come right back. So in January, the district comes out with a report. I think it's like, if I recall, like a 20-page report or something like that, where they detail their interviews, multiple interviews. I think three different times they talked to teacher Rachel Goodall here. They spoke to the student. They spoke to the student's mother, and they come out with their conclusions. What was in that report? What did the district ultimately determine?
Well, it's really interesting because on one hand, they blast her, for lack of a better term, saying, hey, you are crossing a professional line. There are reasons we have rules, like you cannot be in a classroom alone with a student without anyone else present. It just looks, again, nefarious. There is clearly something wrong here in terms of the fact that they accuse her of lying to them, again, almost a dozen times. And they essentially just don't believe what she is telling them. On the other hand, they just don't have that concrete proof that this improper teacher-student relationship or physical contact, sexual contact actually happened. But because there are clear violations from her employee handbook, they decide on a 10-day suspension. What's really interesting is in the report, the district says, we do not believe you can return and actually teach without a tarnished reputation. However, she seems to believe that she can. And so for that fact, they try to help her with this.
You actually have eventually the superintendent writes, because she appeals the suspension or files a grievance about the suspension. And after the district addresses that grievance, the superintendent actually wrote and concluded that you did not engage in this inappropriate behavior with a student. And the superintendent writes, I believe you to be sincere and you have brighter days ahead. So as of February, a year ago now, you have the superintendent of the school district saying, I think we can get you back on a better path. This letter is going to be in your file. It's going to be there, but we think you are sincere and brighter days ahead here at Oak Creek High School.
And keep in mind that letter also says she wanted to get this investigation out of her report, probably because of the fact that they concluded that there was no sexual contact. But again, they gave her the option in order to reduce her suspension that she would have to meet with the superintendent and clearly left him with some sort of impression that, hey, we're going to get corrected here.
Do you think they kept part of the reason why they kept it more internal versus like looping in the SRO or the police in general was because they wanted to kind of like when a kid misbehaves and you know that you kind of caught them, you keep asking them, are you sure you don't just want to tell me what happened here. And then you kind of keep doing it, hoping that they do tell you the truth. Do you think that's part of the reason why maybe they were kept questioning her and having all these different meetings to give her the chance to potentially say, hey, yes, this happened? It might not be as, I don't know, like, it may not rise to the level of I don't know, even know what I'm trying to say. Like, it wasn't a not a big deal, but
that well, I imagine as a school district, and I'm trying to, you know, give them some, you know, some, I've never been a school administrator,
yeah, right.
But I do imagine certainly teachers unions, mm-hmm. yeah, they're on the other side going, hey, these teachers have rights and you right. want to be very cautious legally about making sure you are not violating the rights of an employee, because then your whole investigation may be worthless if mm-hmm. you have violated the rights. So there is a balancing act. But I do think as parents in the district, I'm sure there are plenty who say, why would you keep this in the dark even for a couple of weeks? Mm-hmm. Why wouldn't you get police involved right. right away? You're talking about sexual contact with a student.
I think, yeah, you're kind of hitting on it. It seems like they wanted to deliver an appropriate response. Mm-hmm. And if it didn't, without, again, that very clear burden of proof, I should say proof rather, that this happened, do you need the police involved? I could see that being a question. And like you said, with the teachers union being involved, this is a new teacher. Do you really want to give her the impression that, hey, we go after everybody with the entire gamut of resources we have, or we just respond what we feel is appropriate to certain things? Again, easier for us to say, looking at it in hindsight a couple right. years later, but I could see that being a consideration.
So Rachel Goodall does return to work. I think it was January 13th is her return date of 2023. She's back in the classroom in spite of the district saying, we think your reputation has been forever tarnished. She's back in the classroom. She goes to work. And then we have the superintendent coming out and saying, you have a bright future with the Oak Creek School District. And maybe this is all going to go away until a few months later when something happens that changes everything. And we're going to talk about that when we come right back. So the rumors have flown. Everybody talks about it. It's a big buzz. There's an investigation by the school district. The police or school resource officer says not enough here for criminal charges. No evidence of sexual contact. To be clear, the student at the time says, no, we did not have sex. We didn't kiss any of that. You know, we didn't text each other in off hours. So the district ultimately says, yeah, you lied to us. You were not real honest. You had a closer relationship than you let on. But we don't think it was inappropriate, and we don't think there was any evidence of sexual contact. That's January.
Yes.
Now February, March, April go by, and in May, suddenly something happens that changes everything. What was that?
It's a different teacher that just through the course of their duties of the day is kind of in the hallway when he hears this student yell at an ex-girlfriend that essentially criticizing her and then saying, the quote, I believe, is, that's why I cheated on you with a teacher. Certainly any, you know, normal or just level-headed teacher is going to hear that and say, excuse me, what?
Yeah, and it sounds like the description of this was a loud, dramatic,
emotional shouting.
This was someone who was saying, you know, I hate you, whatever it is, this is someone who becomes the ex-girlfriend now. So he's laying into this other female student, right?
Yes.
But ends that tirade. By the time... the tirade ends, the teacher is now out in the hallway mm-hmm. observing.
Yep.
I'm sure others were as well.
Right.
But then it ends with, that's why I cheated on you with a teacher.
And it changes everything. That teacher comes forward. She goes to, again, the ninth grade center, or I believe it's a man, actually. He goes to the ninth grade center and principal and also the Oak Creek High School principal. And that is when those two reach out to the school resource officer and say, hey, we need you now to formally look into this. Mm-hmm. Again, 4 months after the district already did its own investigation. And this time it's way different. The student who they talked to at the high school does admit that, yes, something happened and it was in December and it was on the day that we thought. And that really just pivots the case to the criminal realm.
What I find really interesting, you talk about the amount of time that's passed. Even in this interview in May of 23, the school resource officer is doing this interview. At first, the student denies, again, there was a sexual relationship. But as the interview goes on, he ultimately says something did happen. And then he actually goes into more detail and describes the incident and what happened. The teacher was very emotional. She was crying. She was talking about her ex-boyfriend, I guess it was. And eventually, the description is that she sort of invites him in for this sexual encounter. that took the course of the interview to get there. And you think about it, the first time around, the school resource officer never talks to the teacher. He calls the mother of the student, who says, I don't think there's anything to be worried about. So there is no in-depth interview with the student, who's the victim here in this criminal case. There is no in-depth interview with the teacher, and she's back in the classroom, and this goes on for months before finally they do the real investigation, and suddenly you have an admission, or at least a statement, a claim by the student that, oh yeah, we did have sex in the classroom. One thing I wasn't clear on is his statement describing that night of the video where there was the JV basketball game and they disappear into the classroom?
It is. It's that 53-minute period where they are in that classroom together after the cleaning lady stops by. So if you narrow that down, that's about a half hour that they're looking at.
So the student's parents, as you mentioned, were like, no, this teacher is valuable. We don't want anything bad to happen to her. They're not in a relationship. There's no inappropriateness happening. But now, fast forward a little bit, did they ever end up saying, oh, gosh, okay, yeah, we were wrong, and maybe this was happening? Or do we not know
I
that?
Can't say off the top of my head, and I don't have the records in front of me.
Yeah.
But they did hire an attorney, mm-hmm. and they have asked for privacy throughout this whole process.
Sure.
And we've respected that. So certainly I think that there's an understanding that, hey, maybe he was lying to us as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, if you don't think anything happened,
right.
you think he maybe just has a close relationship with his mm-hmm. teacher. Close relationships that are professional are good mm-hmm. in a high school.
And you want to trust your child.
You want to trust your child.
And, they're in ninth grade, they're not two.
Among the records you had was her actually her job application.
Yeah.
And she wrote in her job application that one of sort of her vision of herself as a teacher was to sort of nurture the students and have this close relationship with them to help them become the best they can be. Sort of matches with someone who maybe if this was an appropriate relationship and appropriate, not inappropriate, that you might go, okay, maybe she's got a little different approach with students, but it's a more personal approach, and maybe that's okay. But this clearly, based on what the student said in the police interview in May, clearly went way too far, obviously to the point of leading to criminal charges.
Exactly. And one thing I might add, too, that we didn't touch on yet is the suspension, because the district helps her through that. And when I say help, I'll say this. It says in the report that they actually chose to scatter some of the suspension days. I have never seen that actually happen, even when I was in high school, to students or to, you know, see it from a professional standpoint. But the reason they say that they did that is to not essentially hurt one single paycheck. And that may be true. But think about it from a parent's perspective. If she's only randomly out on a Tuesday or a Wednesday or a Thursday here, what have you, it could be professional development, but it also could be perceived in a way that they are trying to hide the fact that they're disciplining this teacher by scattering the days across an extended period.
And that, as I said before, is something we have heard in other school districts where parents get the impression that the school district is trying to keep this quiet, trying to sweep it under the rug. Certainly in East Troy, that was a claim that the parents of the female student victims have claimed. They've said that they felt the school district went out of their way to try to keep this out of the public eye. In this case, I do want to talk about the open records aspect of this, because ultimately criminal charges are filed in July, I think it was. Is that right?
Yep, July of 23.
This is after you had filed your open records request, which I also wonder sometimes, does that raise the specter of sort of, we know the public's looking now, mm-hmm. we better take this mm-hmm. seriously. Does that play into a DA's decision as to, am I going to charge here? Do I have enough? Well, the public's watching. The media's watching.
You wonder, certainly. In getting the police report, they arrest her, if not the next day, it's shortly after the student makes that admission. So that's still, we're looking at late May to early June. And again, criminal charges come like 7 weeks after that. So you're not sure if it came before us or after. Obviously, the DA's office has time to review and file those charges. But certainly, I would imagine that they are more than aware that there's public interest in this case.
For what I again, building my timeline, I can tell you this, that it was June 29th that the school district notified Rachel Goodall of your open records request. A couple of weeks later, she files a lawsuit to block the release of those records, the first of two lawsuits, mm-hmm. which we'll talk about here in a moment. 2 days after she files that lawsuit to block the release of the records, criminal charges are filed. Now, is that a coincidence? Maybe, because obviously they're building their case based on the interview that was done back in May. It may just be a complete coincidence of timing, but you look at that and you go, a lot is happening on the one. She's trying to keep this stuff out of the public eye. And they maybe they look at that and say, we got to get these charges filed. If we're going to do it, let's do it now. Strike while the iron's hot. And they do. She still fights the release of these records. And in fact, like I said, she files two lawsuits to block the release. Tell me a little bit about that and why ultimately the court decided that these records should be released even with an open criminal case.
So when you file an open records request for an employee's personnel file here that is a public employee, the employer, in this case, the Oak Creek Franklin Joint School District, is legally required to notify her to say, hey, your records, your personnel file has been requested. And the district actually decided, we've done our balancing test, we should release these. But within that notification, they give her a time period to essentially do what she did, to sue and to block it. And so that's what she did in civil court within Milwaukee County. And her attorney, who is the same attorney that is representing her for the criminal case, argues that the release of these records would impede her right to a fair trial. And keep in mind, again, this case starts before the criminal case starts, which is interesting. But the judge, come November of last year, November of 2023 now, says no. And it's actually a twofold no. He says, first, you did not properly summons the case, file that summons with the school district. So essentially the court lacks jurisdiction. But then Judge David Borowski says, even if I did have jurisdiction, I still would rule against you because all of these files essentially fall within the public's right to know. There is no necessary legitimate public policy concern, I believe are his words, that the public should not see these regardless of the trial.
And you interviewed Tom Kamenik, who we've had here on the podcast before, an open records attorney with Wisconsin Transparency Project. He said there's a lot of previous legal rulings that have made clear that these disciplinary files are and should be accessible to the public, right?
Exactly. And you wonder, with how the law is written right now, is it just a stall tactic? You know, to actually file that lawsuit and try to prevent your files from getting out there. And kind of really based upon his interview, we decided, is it even necessary to intervene? Because we believe that the court is going to rule in the favor of the records that we requested.
So the records get released, her lawsuit kind of null and void, right? I mean, so then we get them.
Yes.
And is there anything else that comes out of that aside from what we get, all the picture and stuff.
That's where I think when you look at the criminal complaint, that's what I found fascinating here is you look at the criminal complaint, it's got the basic allegations and no more. But we don't get any of this background of the school district's right. investigation, them saying we think you're gonna have a bright future with the district. We don't think you actually did anything sexual here. We don't see it. Now you have this sort of the whole progression. What I also think is really fascinating is you've got that video.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you can judge for yourself, what does this look like? Mm-hmm. And it surely doesn't look like what you expect a teacher and a student to be doing at 5 or 6 o'clock, after school mm-hmm. hours when they disappear into the room and the door is closed. And not just closed.
Locked.
But locked.
Yeah. And let's be clear. The reason we file this open records request is kind of twofold. It's A, to see what really happened, but B, to almost judge how the school district handled this case, really based upon the allegations and the concern in the tips that we've received from parents and people around the district.
Did you ask the district for a comment on that aspect of this? Have they talked to you at all?
I haven't yet. I'm still working through some of the laws here because we're curious about the inclusion or lack thereof of police and where that kind of aligns in terms of even the mandated reporting law, because teachers like nurses and doctors, whoever, are required to report. And it's interesting just following the timeline here, which is, again, very complex, that there's this kind of 4 to 5 month gap before the time police actually
get involved. Imagine they would say, the student said there was no, so we don't have a student saying,
I had sex with a teacher,
and they still didn't, because they would be mandated reports.
Yes.
Clear as day at that point. The student didn't say that.
Correct.
Right. There are suspicions, and they ultimately conclude, in fact, we don't think this happened. I would guess if I'm the school district, my explanation would be, we had no evidence that there was a sexual relationship at that point. And once they got that evidence, then, once the teacher overhears in the hallway, I cheated on you with the teacher.
Then they go,
whoa. Yep. Mm-hmm. We need you to look into this more seriously.
And certainly, you know, give the district credit. When they absolutely heard that allegation, they responded. When they first heard these allegations in January after the Christmas break, they jumped on it as well. But again, from our kind of bird's eye view, we want to make sure we're understanding all the information correctly. The other thing was there's so much paper here. There's so much paperwork. There are hours of video that we were looking at. And so it's all complex is how I would put it.
Have you reached out to the teacher at all or her attorney? Have they talked?
I've reached out to her attorney several times. Phone calls, voicemails, emails, nothing back. And that doesn't surprise me. Right, it really doesn't. But I want to at least give her the opportunity to come forward and tell her story to us.
I'm scanning this timeline that I built because there's something that really stood out to me. And I think it's one of the more poignant things that I read because when we talk about teachers having sex with students, sexual assault in the classroom, we often hear about if it's a male student, you might hear it described as rape or assault. When it's a female teacher with a male student, oftentimes it's a relationship. I actually saw a headline of another story about a female teacher and a male student. And it talks about, I forget, but it's painted almost more as like sort of a scandalous romance as opposed to sexual
predatory
assault
or something,
or predatory behavior. And this is a 14 in the end, you even described that this 14-year-old, he was a power lifter. He sort of looks a little older than maybe a lot of 14-year-olds do. This 22-year-old teacher looks older than a 22-year-old teacher, I think, does too. But so maybe you look at that and go, okay, so it doesn't sound to some people like he's as much of a victim. But then I read the post that he put on social media. This is one of the things that really drew the district's attention early is when all of the investigation starts internally, before the school resource officer is notified, after they come back from Christmas break, the word's getting around. They've done two interviews with the teacher. The teacher is telling him, I might lose my job. And he then puts a post on social media. I think it was Snapchat.
Yes.
Right, to other students. And this post on social media, someone screenshots it. The district ultimately sees this. And he says, this bleep is not a joke. And he goes on to say a lot of things about, he's going to leave and go to another school district. But he said something in there that really caught my eyes. He said, this is not the kind of thing that a 14-year-old should be dealing with. And that was actually one of the more poignant things because whether he voluntarily engaged in this relationship with the teacher, whether he was, I hate to use this phrase, hot for teacher, that's the way some people will view these sorts of things. He's a child victim if, in fact, there was sexual contact here. He is a child victim of sexual assault. This will stay with him. This is something that he will be dealing with for the rest of his life, and you can only imagine what that might lead to in terms of the need for counseling and other things. If, in fact, this is true, if she is guilty, this leaves a lasting impression on that kid.
Oh, absolutely. And I think you've hit the nail on the head. If the gender roles are flipped here, you almost wonder if there's a different response, from the district, from police, but also just kind of how they handle it and how it's viewed publicly. Because I do think you're right. It's, I'm sure there are male students at the school that maybe give him props, but not realizing that, okay, this is actually A, serious, B, as you said, going to be with him the rest of his life, and C, if she is in fact guilty, you were the victim of a crime. And I think it's hard to maybe wrap your head around that for something that just happened allegedly in a classroom.
So what's next for the case then? We know you'll still follow, and you said there's more stuff that you're kind of pouring through. What's next in the case?
So she just actually had a hearing in the criminal case that was gavel in, gavel out, frankly. But her criminal trial is set to begin in April, late April. And so right now it's all systems go to that. The civil lawsuit for our records is already decided. There was a second lawsuit because another agency, another outlet requested similar records. It's been kind of stalled. I'm not necessarily sure why it stalled, but we'll have to see that. But this is going to play out here in criminal court very soon.
I think that's probably a good time for us to go off the record, and we're going to do that when we come right back. And it is time for us to go off the record. This is the part of the podcast where we get a little more casual and have a little fun by answering a question for which we have not prepared, but of course, Sarah Smith has that question for us.
Okay. Today, we're going to talk about this. What are you totally unqualified for? but you think you could do it.
And my first thought was journalism. I mean,
I've tricked people for enough years that they keep bringing me back.
I don't know. That's a tough one. That's a good question. Something
totally unqualified for.
But you think you could still do it.
I think I could teach a workout class.
All right.
I say that having, frankly, performed surgery on my Peloton bike yesterday for hours.
Are you a YouTube expert now?
Yeah, I'm getting there. I had to spend a lot of money on tools and the right parts. I was pedaling, and I had the pedal actually pop out of the bike in my shoe.
Oh, gosh.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's stressful. Okay.
Exactly. So, but anyway, I've seen enough, participated in enough of those classes. Yeah. I think I could do it.
Okay.
I'm not qualified, but I could do it.
All right.
You know, it's funny. Once you started saying that, the YouTube stuff, I have found myself doing things
you're
that
plumber,
I am totally
you're a plumber,
you're
a woodworker.
My sink, you mentioned plumbing. So we moved into a house in 2018 and have been there now for 6 years. And I have had to repair the plumbing under the sink. I have had to put, several times, I've had to put in a new garbage disposal. I'd never installed a garbage disposal in my life. Now, occasionally the sink keeps leaking because I know I haven't done a professional job, but then I'm determined to go, I'm not letting this beat
me. Right.
And I get a YouTube video out and I get back down there and I add a new fitting or something,
ship,
or whatever
shape.
It is.
Yep. Yeah.
And it's still holding. Mm-hmm. So I am sort of I'm an unqualified, desperately unqualified
unlicensed,
plumber, but I believe I can do it. I there are a lot of those sort of around the house projects.
Yeah.
I'm convinced I can do if I watch enough YouTube videos.
That's
it'll be less expensive that way.
That's true.
Ideally,
in the long run, it might be more. I imagine contractors watching this going,
let's look up that Brian. Where does he live?
We're gonna reach out to Brian Polson. I think we've got a sales job to do. So
that's funny, Kale, you got something?
I really want to say, first of all, I have the utmost respect for our weather experts, and they know a lot of math. But I think I could do the weather.
Okay,
you think
not the math part. But
just
not
talking
part.
About it.
What about like standing there with the green screen and the whole deal? You think you could do that?
Yeah, I think I could. But at my next choice is storm chasing. I am not qualified for storm chasing.
You
but
did
I
do
could
that
do it.
Once, though, right?
I did do yes. it. Yes, yes, I did. Hmm. But I had a professional with me.
Okay, that's fair. Yes, you did. I think I could cook. Like I could be a chef. I've watched so many Food Network. Like I would like turn on the TV, Food Network, and watch it forever and ever. I know all these little tips and the tricks and the, I don't know. Just
you think you're one of those people they could give you like, all right, use these six
yes,
ingredients and
I
make
think,
a.
I think I could do it.
Really?
I think I could do it. I think I could. My husband and I constantly talk about doing like a what's the basket where? Gosh,
now
blank.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Where you just cook with literally you open a basket and there's like six ingredients and you don't know what it's going to be. Man, the name of
there's
that show
like,
is going
to
drive
lard,
me crazy. Yeah, pork rinds or something. Yeah. And then you have to make a dish out of it. I think I might be able to pull that off.
I think about that all the time because I have this like fantasy of working in a restaurant.
Yes.
And like how cool that is. And but then I'm like, once you start having to cook for people
I know,
that
it
you're
might not
you
be
don't
as
know,
fun.
I don't really yeah. think I would enjoy it anymore.
Although when I am cooking, gosh, early 40s, and I'm going to admit this, like I'll pretend I'm on a cooking show where I'm like, all right, guys, if you just throw this meat in the freezer for 15 minutes, put a little chill on it, it'll slice nice and thin. You'll be able to do that. There's something about it. So
I'm about to admit this to our own staff because just what you just said right there, that's teaching. I've always said I actually would love to teach sometime. I'd love to teach investigative journalism. I'd love to teach, you know, students who are coming up for the schools. Maybe that's something I'll do part time later on, maybe as a retirement thing. I love the idea of teaching. But then just this week, I have to put together a presentation for our own staff on something where I had to make a Google Slides presentation. And I realized, when you actually have to come up with the curriculum, the stuff you want to teach, that's hard. I'm not qualified to be a teacher, at least not right now.
Right.
I just believe that I could do
it. Yeah. And you know what? If you believe it, you can achieve it.
I don't believe like a I don't true, think true motivational speaker.
No, you know what? The best example of this is my own wife, who she's going to be like, stop talking about me in the podcast. But my wife loves to watch the adventure shows where like people are like, you know, alone or things like that.
Oh,
they're like off in the wilderness and they have like four items that's all you can bring with you.
I
and you
die.
Have to survive for 100 days. She loves the survivalist shows and she'll sit and watch them. And I think she's convinced that she could survive in those conditions.
Yeah.
But she does so with a blanket and a warm dog in her lap. And, you know, we do have to take one more break. We're going to wrap things up when we come right back. Sam, thank you for coming on and great job. The work you did on this story, obviously the open records work you've done, really brought a lot to light here that I think the public deserves to know. So
thank you.
Good work on that. If you have a topic you would like us to discuss on Open Record or an issue you think we should investigate for Fox 6 News, send us an email to fox6investigators@fox.com. As always, thank you to the people who make this podcast possible, including our executive producer, Sarah Smith, our editor, Dave Machuda, and our chief photographer, manning the video switcher, Kale Zimney. With that, I'm Brian Polson. We'll be back next week.